The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Moving Forward with Jen Sabin. The 21st century has introduced new norms and resources that are of immense value to businesses and their bottom line. Yet in business, we require relevance and innovation, not just more information. We need the true stories of what works and what does not work. Our program today will tell you what you need to know. The experiences, perspectives, and resources shared by Jen and her guests will make all the difference for you and your business moving forward. Now, here's your host, Jen Sabin.
Hello, hello, and welcome, everyone. Welcome to Moving Forward. I'm Jen Sabin, and today we actually shifted gears. You wouldn't know that unless I told you. However, about 20 minutes ago in the studio, we made a topic change, and today we're going to be discussing business turnarounds. What prompted that? Well, in the past 24 hours, there were two companies that I spoke with in my company, the Growth Management Group, and one of those was somebody who reached out to me who basically, a client canceled an order. The same day, the vendor, the supplier to the company, drew funds against that order. And the client found themselves, not the client, the business, the small business. So the business had the client who canceled the order, and then there's the supplier that they got the product for the retail. You know, they bought wholesale from the supplier to retail it to the customer. And the supplier drew funds for the product that they had sold the small business. And basically, they found themselves in a place where they could possibly close their doors. Okay. Now, it's not news or surprise that that potential was there, and after having, you know, further conversations and sorting some things out, there were actually a lot of initial clues which then became warnings. And so today we're talking about business turnarounds, and there's such a rich applicability here for wherever you are in your business. You could be humming and soaring, and you might not even recognize that there are clues, that there are profit holes. So here's just this really great and rich opportunity to set back and look at your business and consider also, depending on the nature of the business, you could be a Fortune 100, a Fortune 1000, and a small business. You know, Sue and Jane have a $1.50 and start a business, and it's in its early stages. You're hoping to hit six figures, this, you know, break through 100,000 this year, or 50,000. There is a lesson here for everyone, and not just an intellectual lesson, like to get it and understand it. It's to own it, you know, to have it be at almost the cellular level. It's not just this kind of intellectualization of an idea. It's actually, how do you live it? How do you apply it? All about realization. Realization in terms of awareness and realization in terms of making something a fact. So I said I spoke with two people. I know I'm jumping back. Two people. And the other was an early stage startup company that's looking for funding. And what was interesting was this particular person, their conversation was, you know, if I'm not being a catalyst to a sale every day, then something's off. The previous conversation, that individual came from a really strong work ethic and good business background, but lived in an organization where they weren't responsible for being a catalyst to client sales. They maintain client relationships. So there are some undistinguished habits that this person brought into the business that they started where they're operating as an employee more than the cause and catalyst to having the ongoing pipeline and flow of business. So what do we do with all this? You know, what does this all mean? What does it mean to you? Because you're like, okay, I'm listening. Where's my value? You know, where is my opportunity for learning that will have me engaged and have me be willing to invest the time of my life to be part of this conversation? Well, we're going to be talking about turnarounds. And, you know, there's a difference between a business challenge and a business turnaround. A business challenge is something that is not unusual. It's something that we experience in our businesses. Every business has challenges. You know, some can become quite serious, but a business turnaround is a situation where it's, you know, fish or cut bait. Like this, you know, first conversation. This person is going to potentially go out of business within potentially the next 30 to 60 days unless something changes. Period. They'll have to close their doors. Done. Versus a business challenge, which is something that needs to be addressed and dealt with and overcome, but it doesn't mean that the underpinnings of the entire entity are done. And what I know is typically when a client comes to my company or the growth management group or myself and they say we're in trouble, it's pretty bad. You know, it's pretty bad. But here's the thing. It is an exception for a business to go into failure without plenty of warning signs. Most of us ignore, disregard, don't believe, we justify as temporary, and we dismiss them, right? So we want to kind of be willing to tell the truth. You know, there's a great example here, and so many of you may be familiar with this, but maybe you haven't heard the story in a long time, and it's always wise to, you know, hear a story from a different stage in life. And that is, let's think about IBM, Big Blue. Literally, you know, dominated the industry, was a stellar company. You know, we all kind of love the story of when they first started and they said, okay, we want to be a world-class organization. So if we're going to be a world-class organization, we need to start acting like that and being that now. How does a world-class organization operate and behave? And literally from how they answered the phone to how they interacted with clients, they constituted themselves as a world-class organization. You know, it's one thing to state your values of an organization. We want to know what your real values are? Watch how things are done. Okay, so there's what we say and there's what we do, and then very often there's a gap between the two. This might not be news to some of you, and there might be some shrugging or brushing that off, but literally, you know, notice if there is a congruency or an alignment in terms of what your stated values are or what you believe the values, your values are, the values of the business, and how they're reflected, if they are. And quite frankly, often there's a disconnect. There's a disconnect. So what's really interesting with IBM is in 1990, that was IBM's most profitable year ever. And by 1994, IBM lost $16 billion. That's with a B. That's not $16 million. $16 billion. That's serious. And literally, IBM in 1994 had enough cash to last for 100 days. So here I am talking, you know, with this individual who owns a small business and the challenge that they face in terms of that might be out of business, just enough to pay their overhead for the building they're in, their rental space, for their physical location for this month. And outside of that, you know, are going to have to close their doors. And here's IBM with enough cash to last them 100 days. Well, Lou Gerstner, G-R-E-S-T-N-E-R, comes in as CEO. you know, definitely a stellar reputation, background, Harvard, McKinsey, you name it. What he did immediately was make the company solvent, work to make the company solvent by cutting billions in expenses, and raise cash by selling assets. So there was a fire sale, so to speak. What he was looking to do was, he wasn't looking to sell off the company, but what he was looking to do was to leverage the three businesses, the core businesses. Because what had happened was, as this company grew and expanded and became, you know, kind of this huge elephant, it became sluggish in the sense that the business units were competing with each other. You know, I remember that at one time I was working with this restaurateur in New York, and we were in one of their establishments, and we were talking with them, and they said that they were thinking of putting in a juice bar. And this is years ago. And so this individual, who's just this amazing restaurateur, just a really good woman and just witty and funny and engaging and brilliant, and has since sold off the entities, is at a different stage of life right now and hopefully is listening to this somewhere on the planet and just enjoying. And in terms of that juice bar, you know, at that time I asked, okay, so what are you creating internal competition for? So if they're buying that, what are they not buying? And you have perishable items, so it's a different type of inventory management. You know, it was just kind of being pragmatic and asking questions, just being curious. It wasn't about saying do it or don't do it, but actually noticing that this person who had, and this was in the earlier days of kind of cappuccino or cappuccino in the United States and the emergence of an expansion of kind of the coffee genres, they were creating, they weren't necessarily increasing profitability. They weren't necessarily tapping into more of client dollars. And where they were located, they weren't necessarily going to be attracting new clients. They were just creating a internal competition with a costly overhead. So to look at, you know, what is the expenditure here? What is the potential profitability? So in IBM, this does circle back to IBM, they were actually stepping on each other's toes. So they were going after the same pocket. They weren't leveraging. They were competing. So what Gressner did was also create it so that the rewards were now tied to the entire company versus the unit they were working for. So consider this. This is all within 100 days to get this sorted out and handled. This is a strong current. You are out there in the ocean and shore is over there, and you're going to make it or you're not. This is not a, you know, this is not a game. This is not a, what do they call it? If this is an actual emergency. So what's interesting is because he was an outsider, he didn't have any attachment to a lot of what those who were inside the organization had attachment to. What do I mean by attachment? You know, there's what someone's committed to, and then there's being attached to how it goes. So you may have something that you really want, but you're attached to that. It has to come about this particular way, right? So in a company, you might be attached to a particular system, a structure, a product. Like, no, there's no way we can get rid of it. There's no way we could, this is how it's done. So without even realizing it, you're limiting the possibilities. You know, his mission was to turn the company around, so he was able to sacrifice non-performing products that those within the organization would have taken longer or had a much more challenging time cutting the lifeline to. Right? So they may have just been unwilling to do it. So, you know, he also looked at people management because they were competing against this in IT in the industry. You know, skilled people are the biggest asset. They never looked at things that way. So he created a culture where performance was a key to success, And employees were now able, they had created a liberal option, stock option program that employees could participate in. What are we hearing now? We're hearing radical stuff that maybe from the outside doesn't seem so radical, but we're talking about this huge, vast organization. We're going to go to break right now, and we're going to explore how this is relevant and important to you and your business, and how you can use this to find profit holes and to make a difference in what you don't even know what might not be working, or heaven forbid, if you are in a situation where it's a bit precarious, we're going to try to turn it around for you when we come back.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. What does a visual workplace mean to you? How does it contribute to operational excellence? And what steps do you take to put it powerfully in place? Listen to The Visual Workplace, Work That Makes Sense, to find out. Each week, Dr. Gwendolyn Galsworth, visual workplace expert and award-winning author, shares tools and strategies to help you make the workplace speak at a glance without saying a word. Learn to work safer, faster, better, and at far less cost, no matter what business you're in. Tune in to The Visual Workplace every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business. If you currently or aspire to serve on a board or work in a leadership capacity for or with a public or nonprofit organization, where can you turn to get the best advice and practices? How about Leadership Matters with Dr. G? Our program discusses challenges facing both public and nonprofit leaders. Don't miss these practical solutions and tips to enhance your leadership style and effectiveness. Leadership Matters with Dr. G airs live Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Moving Forward with Jen Sabin. We'd love to hear from you today. Please call in to our program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. If you'd prefer, send an email to Jen Sabin at jensabin.com. And remember, that's two N's in Jen. Now, back to Moving Forward.
Hello, hello, and welcome back. We have an interesting subject that we're exploring today, and that is business turnarounds. And we're not talking about it over there like some intellectual, wow, that is a really good case study. We want to have this be relevant and engaging and impactful for each and every one of our listeners. For those of you who have been, you know, with us on other shows and listeners and are emailing, first of all, thank you so much for the resources, for the stories, for everything that you're contributing. And for those who are listening for the first time, that's what this is about, that making this real and relevant and, again, just not more information. We've got enough information, heaven knows. So we were just looking at the story of IBM's turnaround. You know, certainly up there in terms of the Academy Award of what would, or the Oscar, whatever is the appropriate, I don't really know, award to give in terms of the story of it. And, you know, so we went exploring about some of the things that were implemented to take a company that was literally a world leader and had their most profitable year in 1990 to losing $16 billion with a B in 94 and 100 days of enough cash really for 100 days. IBM, enough cash for 100 days. And how the CEO was able to turn it around. Gerstner was able to turn it around. And over the next 9 years, the company grew about 40%. The stock increased by, I think, by a multiple of 8%. You know, dancing in the streets, hooray, hooray. It doesn't just happen to those of us in small businesses. It's not exclusive. When we talk about the potential for business failure, you know, we've seen some of the giants fall by the wayside. I think there's this piece when we're in small businesses, there isn't as much of a cycle in terms of a timing piece. Unless it's a legal issue or something, you know, there are some catalysts that there's certainly an immediacy. However, for the most part, it takes it a lot longer for it to be in that type of situation. So there are definitely clues, and then there are warnings. The resources of most small businesses make it much more of a shorter cycle, because there are typically less resources, or at least, as you know, we had Christine Benoit, who is an extraordinary restaurateur, not the one I was speaking about prior, but she's been a guest on our show, and she was talking about how when you don't have cash or a lot of resources in terms of cash, that, you know, you have to deal with problems differently. There's a different level of now, and there's a different temporality, and there's a different access in terms of creative solutions. And when you do have cash, it could cover up a lot of problems. So in terms of something, you know, unfortunately, throughout my career, and a lot of them are very happy endings, in terms of companies being turned around, you know, I've had to say things like, you have a problem here that may bring down your company unless you take it seriously. Or, you know, are you putting a Band-Aid on a broken artery? You know, are you willing to do more than it takes to turn your company around? There's a piece here, if you're in dire straits, where it, for so many human beings, it's hard to tell the truth. It's hard not to justify. It's hard not to defend. It's hard to be with, this is the current reality, and it's more than sales went down. You know, it's never typically that simple. You know, it might be more along the lines of, you know, we had an employee who wasn't doing that great, and I didn't really deal with it or manage it. Or I noticed that a lot of our competitors were leaving the vendor, and I just didn't really investigate much more. We wrote it out, you know, kind of hoped. So there's usually a lot more than is at the surface level. So you want to just be aware of, you know, some of the indicators, some of the smoke alarms. Right? If you're having a slowing in accounts payable or accounts receivable, if you are having flat or declining sales, most people tend to say, oh, that's temporary. It might. But do your due diligence, right? Delayed, or, you know, the accounting systems are delayed. There's a physical deterioration. You're noticing things aren't as neat or tidy, or maybe the facilities. You're starting to hear the language of blame. Now, if that's already there, that's something you want to either bring in someone to deal with and sort out, or you deal with it and sort out. That is not a culture or a dynamic that is conducive to sustainable growth. And I promise you, that gets on your client's experience. It completely does. And let's face it, we've all been on the other side of organizations as consumers that have that dynamic. And if we have a choice not to do business with them, we won't. It's just that simple. You see it with certain computer companies. There are people who, when you look, scratch slightly at the surface, you see within the organizational construct a lot of blame, a lot of finger pointing. And in terms of customer service, not so much. And, you know, when people have a choice, they go somewhere else. You know, interesting, is upper management starting to gain weight? I mean, it could be as, you know, basic as that. You know, there are certainly measures and systems that are indicators in the business. Now, what are the sources? Right? What are the sources of some of these problems? They could be overgeneralization. Right? Is your focus scattered? You know, are you trying to do things in arenas where it just doesn't work? A flawed business model. We talk time and time again here in terms of you knowing your business model. What do you do to make money? Understanding and defining and respecting the client's current need, right? And also, you know, anticipating and changing, responding to changes in the marketplace. This all sounds very interesting, you know, in terms of formal, right? I don't know if you remember, I might be dating myself, when FedEx, who revolutionized overnight delivery in the 70s, created Zapmail in 1984. Zapmail. And Zapmail was designed to compete with faxes. Some of you may not have ever used faxes, but for many of us, that was a revolution. You know, faxes, oh my gosh, I could expedite this from the, you know, traditional postal service to from messenger, from overnight, and you could have it within minutes. You know, mind-boggling. Well, Zapmail cost the company about $350 million over 2 years. That's a lot of money. This is in 1984, 24 months, $350 million. Right? And they abandoned it in 1986 and they focused on their core business. They abandoned it and focused on their core business. Here's what I'm curious about. Are you looking for other revenue streams and product lines, or do you have them? And are they supporting growth, scalability, and sustainability? Or is this a one-off that's actually draining your time, energy, and resources and is kind of a closed-end question? It's not opening up other channels. Is it something that needs to be abandoned, completed, closed? And are you attached to it? So you're investing additional time, energy, and resources in it. Now, this isn't saying don't trust yourself, your intuition, your confidence, but there's a difference between being committed to something and attached to it. You know, in IBM, he was able to go in there and cut out the non-performing products because he wasn't attached to it. He didn't have a history to it. It wasn't his child, so to speak. So, you know, they abandoned Zapmail, smart move, in 86, and they focused on their core business. And what was it? You know, I don't know the most current numbers, but certainly in 2010, I do know that FedEx did about $35 billion in revenues. $35 billion. You know, do you know your core business? Do you know the profitability per customer? When I say profitability, you know, or kind of a theory, but the cash, right? It's so fantastic to expand and grow and innovate and put in, you know, new and put a stake in the ground in another market. However, we need to be responsible for making sure that we're not, you know, cutting off our nose to spite our face to some degree, right? You may have a turnaround situation within a healthy dynamic. You may have a core business that's fine, that's growing, that's scalable and sustainable, and you're branching off in another area, and that's actually the turnaround. That is actually endangered. That's not a healthy, growing, scalable dynamic. That actually has alarm signals going off. So when we come back, we're going to talk about this some more. We're going to look at what you can do, not just, you know, good ideas and all these stories, but how can you apply this and learn from this? We're heading towards break, and when we come back, we're going to go to the next step in terms of business turnarounds.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
How can we Americans realize our dreams to earn a living? How can you pursue your dream and make money as an owner or an employee? Learn how at The American Business Person, the online weekly radio talk show hosted by Rich Killian. Today's business leaders share how to succeed and what fails. If you own a new or established business or ever hope to, you must tune in. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Central, and noon Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. Or listen on demand to our archived shows.
Are you a business innovator, or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business.
You are listening to Moving Forward with Jen Sabin. We'd love to hear from you today. Please call in to our program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. If you'd prefer, send an email to Jen Sabin at jensabin.com. And remember, that's two N's in Jen. Now, back to Moving Forward.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Moving Forward. I'm Jen Sabin, and today we are discussing business turnarounds. And, you know, you say that, and it's kind of over there, business turnarounds. This is about when you are find yourself in a position with your business, with your organization, and it's not that there's a business challenge. It's actually much more intense than that. What we're talking about are actually challenges that the business faces, which threaten the very existence of the business. So this is about the business not being around. The very existence of the business is at stake here. Now, some of you might not be in that place, but some of you may be in a place where you're seeing clues that that is a possibility, right? And are you ignoring, avoiding, dodging, not dealing, brushing off, hoping in regards to those clues, which may at some point turn into warnings? And, you know, we don't want that to happen to anyone here. And what's interesting, and I want you to get this, that it might not be in your core business. It might not be in your primary products or services. However, you may have ancillary products or different aspects of the business that are in this situation. So this is about standing up and really looking in the mirror, you know, kind of the good, the bad, the ugly. And we did have a from Kathy Miller in New York asked, are there any other signs? Because I had mentioned before the break, a few signs or indicators. And, you know, the company could be undercapitalized. You just don't have enough financial resources to support the growth as well as the personal needs of perhaps the owner. It might be, you know, what are the sources of often the problems? Because typically what most people look at are the symptoms. But, you know, what are like the root causes? It could be that you've got ineffective pricing strategies. You might not be charging enough to be profitable. There was a woman, this was in, I used to be a part of the faculty, volunteer faculty at what was called the American Women's Economic Development Corps in Manhattan. It was in New York, and it served women who, from all different dynamics and demographics, who were starting their own businesses. And I was someone who was a volunteer faculty who helped teach and work with women and who were starting their own businesses. And this one woman came, and she wanted to make this pottery, and it was fantastic. And I think it was $5 or $8 a mug, and in talking to her, it's like, well, how much do you need for the business expenses, for your personal expenses? In other words, what does the business need to gross in order for you to pay yourself appropriately and for the business to be healthy and scalable? And she had to sell something like 8,000 mugs a month. And how she was going about it was she was crafting each one by hand. So she was either underpricing, but, you know, also what it was quite an awakening to recognizing the what she would need to sell at that price point, and also given the labor intensity, not taking into account the cost of production. This might sound really formal to some people, but bottom line, what she had and how she was considering going about it wasn't viable. It wasn't viable. And it didn't mean that she didn't create something that was, but it was really dealing with the numbers of it. And many small businesses were much more focused on what we do than the business of what we do. So if you're not tracking the numbers, oh my, there was an accountant who was speaking at a meeting I was at the other day, and he shared the story of somebody who, you know, how most people don't really look at the numbers on a weekly, monthly, or at least quarterly basis. A banker was at the same round table and sharing the same information. But he told the story of a woman who owned a business, pretty successful company, and found out that her accountant, if it was accountant or a bookkeeper, had skimmed $300,000 from the company. Now, that happened because this person, even though they hired someone to do the job, they still weren't looking. Doesn't mean they had to do it, but they weren't kind of monitoring and managing. It was like hands off, done deal. What you just heard in the background was me kind of slapping my hands together, like washing my hands of something. And what was the most challenging thing for this particular business owner wasn't the $300K. They actually were very confident and very clear that they could make that back and recoup that. That was not the issue. It was because of that, this person had to let personnel go. And that just, you know, was so challenging and difficult because it wasn't necessary. And it wasn't necessarily about that $300K. They had to make it back. Did they want to? Not necessarily be put in that position. However, you know, so in terms of the numbers, are we being responsible? Sometimes, you know, it's the reverse. We're micromanaging, right? Or it's incompetent or inadequate management, that you've actually grown beyond the management skills, you know, or you're not systematized well. It's not a judgment in terms of good, bad. It's just not sufficient. So, or maybe, you know, you don't have the right people in the right places, or you're not given, do you put up with incompetence? And this is in terms of the skill, what's required to do the job well and, you know, win, so to speak. You know, do the people have the proper tools and training that they need? Are there a lot of presumptions and assumptions? Are there a lot of gaps in training? You know, perhaps you've not managing quality control. You know, I remember when I was on Wall Street, I had a firm I had a seat on the exchange for 20 years and a firm on the street. And there were a couple of women's retail companies that, quite frankly, you knew they were going to go down because the quality had gotten very poor. You know, just as a consumer, a lot of this isn't a surprise. And it did happen, and they were downgraded, and the market caught up with what the consumer was experiencing. So, you know, this isn't all doom and gloom. This is actually good news. It might not be comfortable. It actually, quite frankly, is pretty lousy when you recognize these things. Yet the consequence and the cost of not dealing is much greater than the short-term discomfort of dealing. And so, you know, we're talking about all these things now. Sometimes what you may have noticed is that when businesses or business lines are declining, that very often you start making decisions which aren't aligned with kind of your version of integrity or values. It's a survival mode. And, you know, it's really, really interesting. You know, the story of Levi's jeans. Does everyone remember when Levi's, it depends on what generation you are, like, I love a good pair of faded Levi's, right? However, they became very out of vogue and very kind of dated to a particular generation. And the CEO of Levi's, when they had a story that broke that in China regarding the production of the of their product violated labor laws, that there were some really not so great practices in the factories and manufacturing side, and the current CEO went out and said, we're shutting down all our operations there. Now, what was interesting was the street, Wall Street, panned him, hung him up by his heels, and the company. However, MTV in the States picked up the story, and talk about going viral, pointed to how this company was living true to their values and their integrity, and it brought a generation of raving fans, and the product boomed in terms of being, you know, back not just in the fray, but a leader, an industry leader again, in terms of brand and profitability and as a retail product. So there's a lot of ways this can go, and it's up to the business owner. And that's a hard place to be. So there is something that you can do. So, all right, I'm talking a lot about stories and situations, but there really is a lot you can do. You can even get input from your team. Very often, what people tend to do is they tend to sequester themselves with these type of things. They tend to get into monologue, and they go out of dialogue and conversation. There is an opportunity here for collaboration, and this is the kind of the best place for collaboration. Kind of a crisis. If you want to see how collaboration works at its best, in most businesses or organizations, regrettably, it is collaboration. My company does a lot of work in fostering a collaborative culture in organizations, small businesses, but this is one area where people show up, and it's just brilliant. Now, there's a distinction. There's a difference between solutions and actions. Solutions are actions that solve a problem versus chipping away or reducing it. And solutions aren't always comfortable. They're not always easy. They may be simple intellectually, yet a solution might take a radical change of thinking, of priorities, even of context. You know, a solution might be the earth is flat versus round. Versus, just taking actions. And in a turnaround, very often what's required is a solution. So with that being said, and now if you're saying, well, what's my solution? How do we go to it? We're going to look at some, you know, things that you could do. But one of them was already put out there, and that is, you know, to foster a collaborative dynamic, to notice if you're going inside, if communication's getting sparse, because I promise you, amongst your team, or those in your kind of advisors or whatever, there's gold to be had. There is gold to be had. So notice if you're like, there's a difference between being responsible and feeling like you're the lone ranger here. Between being responsible and assuming responsibility and accountability for all of it, and interacting like you're the Lone Ranger. So when we come back, we're going to talk some more and explore some more about business turnarounds and the relevancy to you and your business.
The
business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
What if you were able to make extra money in your free time? Okay, we hear that all the time. But high yield is all about finding investment strategies that have proven results. Your hosts, Frank Rolfe and Dave Reynolds, will bring you the insider tips that will help create double-digit yields and give you the quality of life you want, despite a troubled economy. Just keep your mind open and listen every week for High Yield with Frank and Dave, Fridays at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Leadership is a vital skill set in today's competitive global economy. Being a leader is not enough. To succeed, you must optimize your performance and know how to imbue others in your organization with leadership skills. Practical, actionable leadership insights are the focus of Leadership Development News, hosted each Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, by Kathy Greenberg and Relly Nadler on the Voice America Business Channel. Doctors Greenberg and Nadler, who coach global leaders on how to be most effective, will share their insights and contacts. The path to leadership excellence begins here.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Moving Forward with Jen Sabin. We'd love to hear from you today. Please call in to our program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. If you'd prefer, send an email to Jen Sabin at jensabin.com. And remember, that's two N's in Jen. Now, back to Moving Forward.
Hello and welcome back, everyone. And I'm Jen Sabin and this is Moving Forward. And we've been discussing business turnaround situations. Now, you might be listening and say, you know, my business is in a pretty healthy situation. Things are good. So here's an opportunity to listen for upgrading, for places where you might not be paying attention, or even to recognize so that you could put in smoke alarms. Because typically there are clues when a business is facing a situation where it requires a turnaround. And a turnaround is simply, it's the process of moving from a period of losses or low profitability, typically where the existence of the business is at risk, really at risk. Not like, you know, things are not great, but the existence, the very existence of the business is at risk into a more productive stage, right? That's the turnaround. This isn't, you know, kind of cotton candy and carousels. You know, this is the turnaround, that it's becoming more profitable, that it's being turned around. And then we could take it from there to that place where it's out of the ballpark, which is an American kind of pop culture phrase, which means when you're in a baseball that you hit it and it actually goes out of the ballpark, which means it's an automatic home run and anyone who is on base goes to. It's a good thing. It's a very good thing. You know, and just to share with you, you know, we tend to think it's us and we tend to isolate, avoid, dodge, deal, get very, you know, it's whether it's embarrassing, shame, which is certainly the most corruptive emotion that paralyzes us. You know, there's all these different ways that people deal or don't deal with what's going on when you're in this place where it, a turnaround is required, where, you know, there are losses, there is a low profitability. So, you know, just consider that, you know, Steve Jobs and, you know, when he left Apple or when he was requested to leave Apple, you know, he created Next. It's what, N-E, capital X-T. And it was a computer workstation for educators. And they really didn't have sales, and had hundreds of millions of investor dollars, which weren't realized. Now, what's interesting is Apple bought Next and brought Jobs in as the interim CEO, and that's when the iPhone, the iPad, etc., occurred. But that was not a success story. That was actually a turnaround situation. right? But we tend not to either focus on these things or know these things because we're looking at it from the most current success. We're looking at what Trump did. So it's about staying started. It's about willing to deal. And by the way, this failure might be the springboard for what the next great success. I mean, Walt Disney, you know, iconic brand Disney, you know, brilliant, brilliant man that created this iconic brand, was $4 million in debt in the 30s. Literally, they had just enough to make this movie called Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs in 1938. And that movie took them out of bankruptcy and funded the Walt Disney Studios in California. It was that one movie. Now, you know, who knows? Who knows? However, it was more than a wing and a prayer. You know, it was definitely more than a wing and a prayer. So here we are in this situation where maybe you're all of a sudden recognizing clues, or maybe it's a bit more dire than that, or maybe you know someone that's a bit more dire than that, and you're watching it and you want to throw them a life preserver. Well, you know, where most people go is immediate action. What I recommend, and this doesn't have to take days, like IBM, they had 100 days of cash, right? This doesn't have to take days, but to get reconnected to what the vision is, to reintroduce some positive energy that pulls you forward. That's not woo-woo. That's not fluff. When you created that business, when you created that product line, there was a vision. There was something you saw that you were looking to realize. And when I say realize, I mean bring it to the world as fact. F-A-C-T, as a fact. And, you know, in this space, in this place where you are potentially hemorrhaging, where you're looking at potentially closing your doors, where client sales are decreasing, where you feel like you don't even know where to begin, to get reconnected with the vision, and the vision might change. It might be a different vision now. So there's this opportunity to get reconnected to what it is that can pull you forward. And so we've identified this. Now, most people go right into actions. I promise you, you need a strategy. You need a strategy. You need to be looking at the strategic solutions. Why? Because with the strategy, the actions become obvious. If you just go into action in terms of isolation, now, again, this doesn't have to take days or weeks, but it does take, you know, focus and intentionality. And it takes also... And this is a place where many businesses don't necessarily delineate down to. So you've got your strategy, you've got your actions. You're taking into account the external drivers, right? You're looking at your goals. There's what we need to do, and I'm saying what we need to do at this point. So with that, what is being managed, what is so critical is follow through, is staying on track. And for some companies, for some businesses, that means literally hourly accountabilities, daily accountabilities. And, you know, because here's the deal. We're not just improving something. We're fighting a downward trend. We are swimming upstream. That might sound a bit dramatic, but we really are. We're swimming upstream. So that's why it's so important to have, you know, that connection again to the vision, the mission, and the values, not as lip service, but really, where's our North Star? Where is our North Star? So then you've got your strategy and you've identified the measures, we're looking at this in terms of what needs to be done. And there's two questions that you're pretty much just asking. You know, what's working? Right? What's working? And how can it work better almost? But you want to focus on what's working. And for any objective, for any outcome in this time frame to be viable, you know, it's got to be important. It has to be something that you're working towards that will make a difference. This isn't just business as usual. And it needs to be consistent with the who the organization serves, what you do for clients, how you provide. So the mission, like the what you're doing, the what it is that you're doing to bring that vision into existence. And your goals must include the impact on the consumer, on the customer. If they're just internally focused, and I know there's systems and structures, but trust me, if it's about cash, it could be mismanagement. It could be that you have, that it's an internal job, but the customer also needs to be taken into account, because the core of a business, the sale or purchase of a goods or services with an attempt to make a profit. At the core, that's the integrity piece. It could be that the systems and structures or the management is off. It could be that you're spending way too much or you're undercapitalized. I don't know, right? You know. It could be that you picked a product and it's similar to a, FedEx's Zap Mail. And it's just, you've got to, kind of, stop giving it life. That's your call. What I want for everyone who's listening today to have the opportunity now from a place of strength to be able to look at what's working, what's not working. Are there any clues? And is there something you could put in place in terms of a smoke alarm or a system or a structure or an accountability piece? Are you looking at your team in terms of the skill sets or, every aspect of your business and entity? What's working? How can it be improved? Turnarounds are not fun places to be, and there are professionals in the world who can support you during that, but we don't want anyone to get to that place. We don't want to have to operate or surgery. We want to focus on preventative medicine here. And, now's your time. And I know that for many, there's this kind of economic overlay of things are not so great, but I promise you that there's more than enough business out there for you to be profitable, scalable, and sustainable. This week, make this week a moving forward week. Thank you so much for being with us today, and we look forward to having you here next week. Take care, everyone.
Thank you again for tuning in to Moving Forward. Please join Jen Saban again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Make your week a Moving Forward week.